2023 NFL season is in the books. The Chiefs have won the Super Bowl. Let's spin it forward for both of these teams. The Kansas City Chiefs have a lot of room to grow on offense, and that is absolutely terrifying as we are squarely in the middle of the Patrick Mahomes dynasty. And on the other side of it, San Francisco probably running it all back next year. How interested are we in this ecosystem for the Super Bowl losers? All that and more coming up on the Super Bowl Reaction Show. Let's get into it. It's Monday, February 12th. I'm Matt Harmon. Welcome to the Yahoo Fantasy Football Show. It is a hell of a day to talk ball because the 2023 NFL season is officially over. The Kansas City Chiefs are officially two-time back-to-back Super Bowl champions. Joining me to do just that, talk a little ball here in the wake of the Super Bowl, is the one and only Andy Behrens. Andy, what's going on, buddy?
You always say that it's a hell of a day to talk ball, but like, it's really a hell of a day to talk ball now. Because that was a classic game. I don't think it was, I'm not prisoner of the momenting and saying that it was the greatest Super Bowl I've ever seen, but that was a classic game. My heart goes out to Dalton Del Don, who was on hand for it, obviously rooting for his Niners. It is not the first time that Dalton has sat through his own team playing in and being on the losing end of an absolutely classic game. This has happened to him as a Warriors fan. It's now happened to him as a Niners fan. I just feel awful for him. I connected with him briefly afterwards, and that's, man, all beats are tough, but that is a really tough one.
I haven't even reached out to Dalton yet. Maybe by the time this pod has launched, I'll have gotten up the nerve to text him. Yeah. But I was like, for me, man, whenever any of like my buddies that are sports fans about like a specific team go through something like that, I even if it's like the Aaron, like I have a few friends that are Jets fans, like I'm not texting them the night that like Aaron Rodgers, you know, tears his Achilles in week one. I'm gonna leave that alone for a little bit. I'll let everybody else do that. So I've left Dalton alone. But listen, man, you're right. That was a classic Super Bowl. I really enjoyed the game. I thought it was exhilarating, and I was glad to not have a real rooting interest on either side because, yeah, you just want to enjoy that. And we have a lot of things to pull here in terms of the Super Bowl. We're going to get into all of it. I will just say off the top, yeah, I sound rough. I spent a week in Vegas, okay? And in the last couple of days, I got a little sick, got a little under the weather. So, you know, we're powering through this podcast, Andy, and I appreciate you having to suffer listening through the, you know, being on the other end of this messed up voice I got going on here.
Well, hey, let me also say that you guys produced great content during the week, and you ended up like particularly the fact that like you started the week with by connecting with like Juwan Jennings, and then he was such a key player in the actual Super Bowl. Like, it is worth people's time to go back and check out the content if they didn't see it as it was unfolding, because it was a great content week by you.
I mean, I appreciate that, and definitely shout out to everybody involved Yahoo Sports wise on the ground at the Super Bowl. Can't say enough about Evan Doherty, Dan Harris, Brett Rader, Jason Chan, the entire crew there, social producers. And especially shout out to Aaron Tan on the ground there with me, a social media editor for our fantasy staff, having an opening night, which is an absolute chaos of an event. It was awesome. Everybody there did a fantastic job. Jason Fitz, our buddy, did a great job hosting. Nate Tice joining me for the podcast. Austin Eckler, you know, again, don't want to leave anybody out, but can't say enough about the great crew, Yahoo Sports. Yeah, Andy's right. If you haven't gone and checked out the content, I would encourage everybody to go check out our Yahoo Sports YouTube page, where there is all of our Radio Row interviews, what's in the cards, the whole deal there. I'm still going to be posting some videos that Colin, podcast producer Colin, shout out, he cut for us there as well. So, you know, keep an eye on the social channels, keep an eye on our YouTube. We got a lot of stuff, great stuff coming that was shot at Super Bowl Media Week. But let's waste no more time. Let's talk about the Super Bowl, Andy. Chiefs 25, Niners 22. Let's just talk about the Chiefs here. We'll talk about the Niners there in the back half of the podcast. Man, I don't even know where to start with the Chiefs, buddy. I mean, it's just, we are squarely in the middle of the Reed Mahomes dynasty. I think we can officially say that now, that we have a back-to-back Super Bowl champion for the first time in 20 years. This was, is this not the crowning achievement of this Mahomes era? Because this was, you know, not an easy road for Kansas City. That's how I'll remember this season, that they had to fight through a lot of in-season adversity. You know, typically we see the Super Bowl champion get up there and be like, oh, we fought through a lot of adversity, all that stuff. This team legitimately did that.
Yeah.
And then in the postseason had to go on the road to Baltimore, had to go on the road to Buffalo, and arrived here winning the Super Bowl, putting an end to, I think, any future, like, what's wrong with the Chiefs talk in September, October.
Yeah, this, first of all, this literal road to the Super Bowl through the postseason, incredible. Like, obviously, you know, they start with Miami. Miami's no joke. They have an unsolvable problem in Tyreek Hill. And then to go through, you know, we've at various points talked about just how dominant Baltimore's defense has been this year. They get through Buffalo again. They face a, you know, about as hostile a neutral crowd as you can possibly face, I think, in Vegas too, right? Like, not even a friendly Chiefs crowd, not even a split crowd necessarily in the building. So just an incredible road, and there would have been no shame in losing to any of those final three teams that they faced. And then the other piece of it, of course, is what they overcame throughout the season, going all the way back to, like, everybody remembers opening night, sabotaged by your own receivers, right? They had to finally come to a point in the season where they were just like, yeah, we're putting Kadarius on the shelf. We don't use Sky Moore anymore, right? Like, these were guys that they came into the season thinking they're going to be featured pieces. And they really, like, this is as bad a receiving core as we've seen with Patrick Mahomes. You look at his regular season numbers, like, he was down almost 50 passing yards per game, the lowest YPA of his career. And that was because he had the lowest, you know, intended air yards per attempt of his career, because they couldn't get downfield. Look at his passing chart from the Super Bowl. It's all, like, behind the line of scrimmage, barely beyond the line of scrimmage. And that's not a reflection of, like, where he's at. That's a reflection of, you know, all the things they don't have in the receiving core. The guys who can get downfield can't catch. They had one deep strike to Hardman. That felt like a miracle. It got wasted because Pacheco fumbled immediately thereafter. But, like, other than that, nothing 20 plus yards downfield. That's a lot to overcome. just a genius level performance by Mahomes in the game. Hard to say enough about it.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought it all the way back to, like, these receivers, because this is what we talked about all season long. And really, like, for as much as the receivers were a problem, I would also maintain that, like, their offensive tackles were a huge problem all season long, too. In week one, all the way through the season. And really, like we talked about, I think, on the previous show with Nate Tice, those were, like, compounding issues, right? Like, oh, yeah, the receivers and Mahomes are never on the same page. Well, of course not, because he's a little rushed in the pocket, because he's easily got the two worst offensive tackles, which is unfortunate because they invested a lot in one of them, in Juwan Taylor. But really, the two worst offensive tackle performances I think he's gotten in his time as a starter. So those two issues compounded on each other. They were issue all season long. And yeah, you're right. Like, this team came into the season trumpeting, which was stupid, I think, at the time. Like, oh yeah, Kadarius Toney, he could be a number one receiver. That was never going to play out well. I think it's unfortunate that Sky Moore did not develop. That was an unfortunate thing that just didn't happen for them. Still never really loved, like, the plan with him in terms of using him as an outside receiver. But, like, that just didn't happen for them this season. So they had to figure that out on the fly, which you can do when you have a great quarterback, right? You can do when you have a player in Pat Mahomes who is, you know, just, I mean, we've run out of, like, good things to say about him. I don't think, like, we should continue to say them and stuff like that. We can and we will, but it just is what it is, man. I mean, he's the greatest player on planet Earth. And that just is kind of the period at the end of the story. But I definitely come away from this game, Andy, you know, still impressed, of course, with what they did on defense. I mean, Trent McDuffie having the game of his life, really, in the perfect moment, I think was an encapsulation for what this team was this season, which was, it was obviously, like, it's Mahomes and it's Reed, and the offense is still, you know, by and large, efficiency wise, a good group, even though there were so many fits and starts seems kind of putting it nicely, but fits and starts to the season. This was a defensive first team. You know, I said on the show a couple weeks ago, like if they win the Super Bowl, we're going to remember this when we look back on the Mahomes run as the Steve Spagnuolo year. And I feel like the fact that we got the performance from the defense that we did, it wasn't perfect, but there's no perfect defense in the modern NFL. Like right. that just doesn't exist anymore. The perfect defense was probably the Baltimore Ravens, which, oh, by the way, this team in Kansas City beat the Baltimore Ravens. So like they didn't get a perfect performance defensively, did Kansas City, but it was enough to, I think, cement what this season was for them, which was, for as much consternation that we had about the offensive side of the ball. And we'll spin forward on offense and what this might look like next year. This was a beautifully built defense with superstars like Chris Jones, who, you know, is a free agent after this year, Legarius Sneed, free agent after this year, but like developmental pieces at linebacker that worked out, you know, Trent McDuffie, a guy they drafted and developed, so many, Justin Reed, a free agent they acquired. That side of the ball hit, it hit so perfectly, and it hit in the biggest moment last night.
To your point about McDuffie, and that's like, if we're going to call out any individual player on that defense, it has to be him. You can make an argument that two of the biggest plays of the game, maybe not the biggest plays of the game, but like that pass breakup on the deep ball to, I think it was Debo, right? Like in the end zone.
Yep.
One of the, you know, the Brock Purdy was maybe a little scattershot throughout the game. We'll talk about him. But there was a beautiful ball. I think it was to Debo that Duffy broke up. That's number one. And then the blitz from the slot on third and five with 2 minutes remaining in the game. Like if McDuffie doesn't disrupt that throw, that's, you know, they can kill a lot of clock and kick a field goal. And then we're having a very different conversation today. So he was absolutely magnificent. A lot of pressure from Spags all night. Unbelievable game plan by him. Gutsy game plan that happened to work out. But tremendous game overall by McDuffie for sure.
Yeah, I mean, I just thought it was a beautiful performance defensively. I mean, they were hitting the right notes at the right time, and it was, you know, it was great to see. And like I said, that has been the story of the season for me from Kansas City, which is that for all the worries on offense and all the legit worries, they eventually figured that side of the ball out. But all the while, their metronome was that great defense. Any other things like from you specifically that stood out in this game that are worth kind of like hitting on or remembering?
Yeah, well, like, first of all, I'll just say like the number of things that Kansas City actually overcame in this game. And at you know, at some point while I was watching, I started like making a list. The Pacheco fumble in the red zone after their one successful shot play. There was a Justin Watson drop. There was that personal foul by Sneed. That terrible opening sequence in the third quarter, right when you thought they might have a little momentum coming out of the half. They had I actually felt like the maybe the most questionable coaching moment of the game was Andy Reid not challenging the spot on that Travis Kelce catch that was probably a first down, and they burned a timeout anyway, and that was weird. The super weird play by MVS in overtime where he turns a nice gain on first down into like a 4 yard loss. Like they overcame.
Oh, he pulled a Deontay Johnson.
Yeah. They overcame so many things that like in my whole life, I have never cheered for a team that would overcome even one of those plays and win a meaningful game. And they had a whole series of them and they overcame it all. I think the other thing that I would remind people of is that like Kansas City had a couple of big sideline blowups between, you know, one between Kelce and Reed, another between Rice and Mahomes. And like, man, that does not matter when you have good team culture and everybody's actually still working toward the same goal. Like we do so much talking about stuff like that, and we waste so many words about like guys pouting on the sideline and guys yelling at each other on the sideline. That's just, I don't know, that stuff burns out so fast and is truly not important. I'm sure it would have been a big story if they'd lost the game, but they didn't lose the game. So like that stuff means so much less than almost everyone thinks.
Now, it's a great point. There was a clip going around. I think it was from it was one of the earlier playoff games either this year or last year where like Andy Reid goes up to Kelce and like he bumps him or whatever. And it's just like, yeah, this stuff happens. And if you're a great team, you can overcome it. And you can just, it's football, man. Like,
yeah.
like I said, if that stuff interests you and you want to get outraged about that stuff, go read a gossip magazine. There's plenty of outlet rags for you to go check out if that's what you're really wanting to focus on, because this team is a like I think Mahomes said it after the game, it just shows you we're competitive, right? Like we want to win, and he said Coach Reed is the same way. So not an interesting storyline for sure. Man, yeah, it's just, you're right to point out how much they overcame in this game. Because when we talk about the 49ers after the break, like, we're going to point to a lot of similar things, like small moments and like missed opportunities and things they didn't take advantage of. And it's a reminder of when you have Mahomes, that window, that margin for error is so much wider. Yeah. Like that razor thin margin for error is so much easier. The needle is you can thread that needle because you have 15 back there. Like it's again, I don't know what else to say. And I know people, it's like, all he took about is Mahomes, the whole thing. But like, I don't know what you want to say. Like, he's the greatest player on planet Earth right now. And like, it's a treat to watch greatness. Nate Tice and I were talking about it after the show on Tuesday. Like, I don't understand why people hate it. They do hate greatness. It is what it is. I mean, we're at that point with Mahomes, no doubt about it. But like, we had to watch, like, we had to get excited about Tommy DeVito at one point this season. Okay. Like, no disrespect to Tommy DeVito and what he did. Like, you know, people are getting jacked up about your boy Tyson Bagent at one point starting games. Okay. Like, let's appreciate for Mahomes for what he is. And as long as we have him, which, I mean, he's 28 years old. Like, we got a long time to go with this Chiefs dynasty. There's no doubt about it. Let's spin forward a little bit with Kansas City here. Because the scary part to me here, Andy, is, like I said, this is the Steve Spagnuolo year in the chapter of the Chiefs dynasty. But that doesn't mean that next year is going to be, right? Like, I'm very curious what the 2024 Kansas City Chiefs offense looks like. Because we were so concerned about this offense at different times of the year. We're so concerned about the receiving core at different times this year. Well, obviously Kadarius Toney's not going to be back with this team. He was a healthy scratch. You know, I think they have Rashee Rice. I'm interested to hear where you stand on Rashee Rice heading into next year. I'm interested to hear where you have, you know, you're kind of looking at Travis Kelce next year, Isaiah Pacheco, the main stays here, but I would argue that they have a near blank slate at outside receiver. They have a near blank slate in the backfield beyond Pacheco. Like, they could add another tight end, and I think that would make a lot of sense. So where do you think Kansas City goes from here, and how do you think that impacts sort of the guys that the bread and butter players in this offense? Because I do think those three guys that I mentioned are bread and butter players for this team in 2024.
Yeah, I've been pretty hesitant to pencil in Rashee Rice as like a, you know, like rock solid. Absolutely. He's a second round pick. He's a third round pick. He's a, you know, wherever people are slotting him at receiver in early draft rankings, things like that, because this team just has such a glaring need for receiving help. And it's probably more than one guy. And I like, there's limited options in free agency, many of whom are probably going to stay with their current teams. So maybe it's, you know, maybe they're doing this through the draft. Obviously, Travis Kelce is at an age at this point where we need to think about like who's going to be taking those targets in 3 years, in 4 years, right? Because it's probably not going to be him. So they have a bunch of answers they have a bunch of questions that need to be answered at receiver. So I'm really hesitant to say specifically, oh man, Rashee Rice, it's 150 targets next year and he's the clear number one. And I don't think we're there, because they have a desperate need for downfield help, an outside receiver. So, you know, it was, again, like that passing game this year, it was almost miraculous, because by the end of the season, everything is at or near the line of scrimmage. I think it was 24 different completions in the Super Bowl were 5 yards downfield or less, right? Like, they're just not, this is very horizontal and very limited. And the receiving core has to change a great deal. So I hate to say that we know specifically where this guy and that guy are going to fall in drafts. I think Travis Kelce is now, not that he ever left the overall tight end one discussion, but it was, you know, for a while there at the end of the season, I think we were looking at guys like Trey McBride, obviously Sam Laporta coming off the great year, as like being in that tight end one discussion. And I think Kelce is, obviously Kelce's a part of it. He's one of the greatest to ever do it. But I do think that we've arrived at a spot where he's clearly not a tier of his own guy anymore, which is just gonna lower him in the ranks, right? Like, we're not gonna be having a conversation about taking him in the first round if we don't think that there's substantial separation between him and the other guys that, you know, are in his neighborhood. Also, like, the Chiefs just showed us that they are one of the very few teams in the NFL that can legitimately kind of flip the switch when we get into December and become a different team. And, you know, Kelce went from having a pretty up and down, you know, a little bit injury marred, not always elite level performance during the regular season. And it was just an impeccable postseason performance, right? Like, right down to him setting up the game winning touchdown in the Super Bowl, right? That was an exceptional play that picked up the first down that got him down to the three. Like, just an incredible postseason run by him. Not that he had anything to prove, but phenomenal. I guess the one other name that you mentioned that we should hit on is Pacheco, who didn't have the cleanest game. He had the killer fumble, but 90 plus yards, 24 touches, caught all six of his targets. I think that guy's a back end of the first round guy next year.
Yeah, I'm interested to see what they add in the running back room. It's like I said, I mean, Jerick McKinnon, you know, Clyde Edwards-Helaire, I don't think these guys are back in any significant.
Oh, by the way, shout out to Jerick McKinnon for even playing from, like, coming back from injury. A huge first down late in the game. Picks up a huge first down on a third. Third and two, third and three. Like, phenomenal game by him just to come back and appear.
Yeah, Jerick McKinnon was one of the cooler guys I talked to at opening night, actually. So that was pretty cool. I was like, oh, right, forgot Jerick McKinnon is here. And I forgot you also used to play for the 49ers, like, right? Like,
yeah.
Well, let's have a conversation about that. Like, I am really fascinated where Pacheco ends up falling, because I can't get out of my head that, one, I think he's a really fun player. Like, I love his running style. I know it's weird. It's unconventional. I think he's at different times been a huge difference maker for this Kansas City Chiefs team. Like, when they're able to just kind of man up and play power football and, like, run over teams late in the season, that's the difference to me between a team like them and Buffalo, which Buffalo's gotten better about running the ball, right? But, like, the Chiefs have just been able to say, okay, we've invested a lot in this offensive line. They had not always gotten peak performances from basically anybody on that line aside from Joe Tooney, who's been injured the last couple of games. Everybody's been up and down on this offensive line, but it is a group they've invested in. So, like, all right, we want to just run people over. We want to just put the ball in Pacheco's hands. Like, we can do that. It wasn't the cleanest game in this one for sure. But at the same time, I'm just interested if they add somebody like where we're going to have all of these veterans available this year. I'm not saying they go out and add like a Derrick Henry, because I think that would be redundant, but I don't think they're like the worst team in the world for a discount signing of like an Austin Eckler or a Tony Pollard or somebody of that nature to like, because I don't think any of those guys are going to be mad expensive. Oh, by the way, they could just do this in the draft as well. They could add another piece there. I just think, like, I like Pacheco. I think he's a good player, but this was an inconsistent up and down run game throughout the year. I think he is part of, not the only reason that that's true. I think he's part of the reason that that's true, just because he doesn't have the cleanest vision. He's not like the most, I wouldn't say he's the most quote nuanced runner in the NFL, but I think he's a really good back. Yeah, I think he's definitely not subtle. I think he's a really good back who could be a part of something, but I just wonder if there is another part to this run game that is yet to come that might make Pacheco a bit more of, like, from a fantasy perspective, he's not like a back half first round, early second round type pick if they add another body. That's just what I'm wondering.
Yeah, well, it depends on the body, right? And this is, you and I have talked about this before. You had a great conversation with Eckler about it during Super Bowl week. Like, all of the running backs are available. There's so many guys available. And there's enough available, and some of them are sort of big brand names, and there's other guys who are just really serviceable players who are available, and it depends on who falls to Kansas City. There are going to be plenty of dudes who want to get there, right? Because that's a path to the Super Bowl. So it's not, you know, we can't realistically look at this and think that they're not going to add anybody. It's just a question of whether they add a Devin Singletary type, or whether, you know, some real, like, Eckler himself or some other really big name back who will command, you know, a dozen, 15 touches a game is going to end up there. That would certainly be a complicating factor for Pacheco.
And let me just say this. I think that to a man, every running back, whether it was Austin himself or Tony Pollard last week at Media Week, every single guy that you talk to that goes from, man, I was kind of splitting touches to then I was the only guy, they just talk about how much that sucks. Okay, so I think from a selfish fantasy perspective, we absolutely want to imagine, yeah, okay, it's a couple of low-end roster dudes in this backfield next year and Isaiah Pacheco, and we're going to go ahead and pencil him in for all the touches. And yeah, he's a back half of the first round, early second round type pick. Let me tell you what, I don't care how much Isaiah Pacheco runs angry and loves contact and all that stuff. You know, Trey Smith at opening night talking about, man, he loves that guy because that's how he feeds off that energy too. Like the offensive line loves blocking for this guy because of that. I don't care how much he loves contact. He's not going to love it as much at the end of 2024 if he's the only name in town. Yeah. So I do think just like that's a thing I'm challenging myself for as a fantasy player. Like, yeah, what do I want? Do I want to push the Tony Pollards up the board because who else is getting touches and he's shown us something before? Or am I trending into dangerous territory doing that? And I'd almost rather like, yeah, let's have the Chiefs add somebody to this backfield and that's going to push Isaiah Pacheco down the fantasy boards. But maybe it's a more efficient bet to get in on that one. I don't know. These are things I'm just working out in my head now.
Yeah, no. And with Pacheco in particular, given his style, given his, like, you know, redlining on every carry sort of style, frenetic, you know, violent rushing style, it might very well be that the best use of Isaiah Pacheco is not, you know, 380 touches. It's not to like just grind him into dust. Maybe a guy like that is best used as like a 240, 250 touch guy who gets some of the most valuable touches, but not necessarily all of them.
Let's just double back to the receiver room real quick before we throw to a break here. I'm with you on really being kind of unsure where I stand on Rashee Rice, because part of me thinks that I want to view him a little bit similar to Amon-Ra St. Brown, because I think they're not identical players, but from a deployment standpoint, that is that's definitely, he's kind of in that ballpark, right? He's a slot guy. He's used a lot over the middle of the field, crossing routes, big in breakers, stuff like that. I think that, I mean, I wouldn't have necessarily said this about St. Brown, but it is true about Rice in his rookie year. He's raw as a route runner. He's like average to, you know, he's, say, average separator against man coverage, shown to be a good separator against zone coverage. And I think if you're going to thrive in that archetype of player, you definitely have to be a good to very good, hopefully great zone coverage beater. That's where I you know, again, I want to dive back into the charting data with him in the back half of his rookie year and see if he really reached those standards. Cause that's kind of what I'm looking for out of that type of player. That's what Amon-Ra St. Brown showed me in his rookie season, which is why I was totally in on him going into his second season, when that was a very like weirdly contentious debate in fantasy circles going back in the 2022 season, Andy, like the Amon-Ra St. Brown wars. I couldn't believe it was kind of so like polarizing, especially because you had to basically like his draft cost that year was like wide receiver 25-ish ADP, yeah, or like wide receiver 30. Nobody was asking you to believe he was going to carry that level of volume that he had to end his rookie season. He ended up actually carrying that volume. He had 146 targets in his second season. And that's kind of what I wonder with Rashee Rice. Like, will the ADP be asking you to believe Rashee Rice is going to have 146 targets? Because that's what St. Brown did in the second season. You look at the other guys like that are following Amon-Ra St. Brown on that 22 Lions team, 70 targets for DeAndre Swift, 64 for Khalif Raymond, 59 for Josh Reynolds. Like, again, having Pat Mahomes as your quarterback is going to ease some concerns here. But at the same time, I'm with you that I think they end up adding somebody. Maybe they take, because like wide outside receiver, blank slate.
Yeah.
I think they can add some players that complicate this target tree a little bit.
I mean, I hope they do, right? Because most of the other names on that team are going to be gone or were pretty useless this season. So they'd better add somebody, because it, like, man, it's so impressive that they just won the Super Bowl with that particular collection of receivers around Pat Mahomes, when, and that team, you know, throwing the ball where they did and how often they did. I agree with you. I just think like we're not going to get a, like we're not going to get any kind of discount, any kind of deal on Rashee Rice, because there's a very good chance we go into next season and people are like, oh man, second year receiver, Patrick Mahomes is his quarterback, and like sky's the limit, he's the number one. Like I don't think that guy falls to like with all those talking points, I don't think that guy falls to like wide receiver 24, wide receiver 25. I think he's going to really have to have an exceptional season to hit his ADP, to justify his ADP. I hope he does it. But he, you know, you made the point perhaps better than I can that, it's not like he was an every route guy this year. It's not like he won in every possible situation. You know, they did some very specific things with him that worked, and he was one of the three guys that they were willing to throw to by the end of the year. And that helped too. But he's so far away from being a finished product.
Yeah, the good news is that like a high quality vertical separator, like a legit X receiver on this offense, it's going to raise the roof and the ceiling, mm-hmm. I think, for everybody involved here. Like that's where you get like, again, similar to what we just talked about with Pacheco, where, yeah, they add like, I don't really think Mike Evans is getting free from Tampa Bay. I don't really think T. Higgins is getting free from Cincinnati, but like they add a veteran like that. They trade up the draft board for one of these great outside receivers in this draft class. Like that's going to push Rashee Rice down a little bit, but potentially could actually raise the ceiling of his outlook, I think. So it's one of those things where, we're talking about ADP here in friggin' February.
Yeah.
Like, this is a fake and hypothetical, non-real conversation, but these are the type of things that can get this offense where that was really good this year, but they were eighth in dropback success rate in the regular season. You know, they were 12th in EPA per dropback in the regular season. That type of move to get that type of vertical separator can take this entire offense up a notch where, yeah, we're not struggling through Travis Kelce weeks. We're not struggling through these like fits and starts for Rashee Rice. So I think that's the scary part about Kansas City, is that they just won the damn Super Bowl. And we're talking about this offense that still has room for improvement in multiple spots. Andy, that is terrifying for the entire league.
Yeah, I was thinking the same thing as you said it. Like, they just won their third Super Bowl, and we got this laundry list of stuff they need. That's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's the thing. Like, again, this is why these type of teams are such beautiful reminders for the ever-changing landscape of the NFL, that, yeah, there's a chance that Legarius Sneed and or Chris Jones play elsewhere next year, which is a bummer, because that defense was one of the treats to watch this season. But as that unit maybe comes down a little bit, the offense comes up. And that's what we just saw with the offense and the defense, like the push and pull. That's why these teams, like I said, these dynasty-type teams, these teams that win a bunch, are so instructive for the endeavor of team building in the NFL. And I think that provides us a beautiful transition to talk about the San Francisco 49ers, the loser of this Super Bowl, which we will do right after this break. All right, we're back. 49ers, Andy. I have a lot of thoughts about the Niners, but I'm just going to throw it to you first. What stands out? What are like kind of your lasting memories about this 49ers team that was oh so close yet again to winning a Super Bowl?
Yeah, there's so much Kyle Shanahan discourse today, right? And this is just one of those, like, you know, I went through all the things that Kansas City had to overcome in the game, right? Like actual, you know, whether it was tactical or just individual errors that they managed to overcome, but like, winning basically means never having to explain yourself, and losing means that you are just second guessed for the rest of time. And I don't think that the coaching performances were so dramatically different. I've read so many takes and seen so many, and whatever, some of it is just like from the hip social media takes that maybe you aren't totally committed to, but I don't know that there's such a huge gap between Andy Reid and Kyle Shanahan. I think Kyle Shanahan is an awesome coach, and most fan bases should take him. I don't even know that in real time, I couldn't tell you that I had a strong lean on taking the ball first or second in overtime. If you want to look to one thing that I think was pretty questionable, in the way Shanahan called that game. And I can imagine the defense for this, but like end of the first half, end of the first half, they had an opportunity, I thought, to maybe take the ball back with like 45 to 60 seconds remaining instead of like 15 to 20 seconds remaining. And that, maybe you have a chance to score again. If you score again, now you're up two scores going into the second half. It also, like, you know, as we discussed while talking through Kansas City, Patrick Mahomes just puts so much pressure on you. Like every time you don't seize an opportunity, it feels so magnified, right? And so the Niners come out in that game, and man, their first three drives, I thought they had every right answer. They just looked better. They're winning like the line of scrimmage on both sides, and their offense looked really good. Purdy had all this time to throw, and like, but still, we get to the end of their first three drives, and they had 3 points. And those mm-hmm. 3 points required like a Super Bowl record distance field goal to get there. And so like, when you hit those points in games that involve Patrick Mahomes and you're like, oh man, it feels like this team should actually be up, 13-0, 17-0 and not, 3-0. That's when you start looking at the live line on the Chiefs, right? You're like, okay, now the Chiefs are going to pile it on. And this is just not where the Niners want to be. Anyway, I didn't think the game was as dismal for Kyle Shanahan as many are making it to be.
I think the fact that you said there's really no separation between Andy Reid and Kyle Shanahan as a coach, I think is actually a great way to say it, because I think that Kyle Shanahan is in sort of the Andy Reid torture zone of where he was at one point in his career, where it's like, can't win the big one. Can't win the big one. And then, you know what? Andy Reid wins one, and then he wins two more. Like, obviously he got Mahomes and that he's not any fundamentally different as a coach. He got the one thing that you need. And like now he's a 3-time champion, and he's going to have a great argument if he sticks around throughout Mahomes' time there, which is, no guarantee. I don't think Andy Reid's, we talk about him retiring seemingly every Super Bowl, and then he seems to be like, I'm not retiring. Ownership is like, we're not expecting Andy to go anywhere. So there's a chance Reid gets 1, 2. I mean, damn, he might get 3 more Super Bowls. He's going to have an argument to be one of the greatest, if not the greatest coach in NFL history. If he continues to win more Super Bowls, he'll be able to push Belichick and some of these other guys in that argument. Like that's very possible. And I think there's a world where Kyle Shanahan, who's, I don't even know off the top of my head, like how old is Kyle Shanahan? I'm looking at it right now. I mean, he's 44 years old.
Yeah.
he's what, like almost 30 years younger than Andy Reid, 25 years younger than Andy Reid. Like, again, we got a long way to go in Kyle Shanahan's history, but that doesn't make missed opportunities like this one any less painful. The fact that you will get back, like, for coaches, it's just different with players. If you continue to chop this wood, you can potentially get back at another Super Bowl. Maybe not this group of the 49ers, which again, we'll talk about in just a second. But yeah, I'm with you, Andy, that like there's a lot of things that I think Niners fans and people, the players and anyone associated with the team will be haunted by. Like there are ghosts that will haunt them from this game. The missed PAT, the block PAT, whatever you want to say, the muffed punt that hits the player's foot and then Ray McCloud kind of has to go for it. You know, the not getting points off Kansas City's turnovers, but like, yeah, the coaching stuff to me isn't like, there were moments where I was like, why aren't they running the ball more? I wanted them to run the ball more, but at the same time, L'Jarius Sneed, I think it was, said after the game, I believe he said it to Steven Ruiz, or he was the one I thought I saw put it out there, like the blitz heavy game plan that Kansas City unfurled on defense was to present fronts that disincentivize them running the ball. Like, you can run the ball and run it really well, but you don't want to run it into inadvantageous fronts. You want to take advantage of that with your drop back pass game. And like the defense gets paid too. You don't just get to come up and to the line and like push the right buttons and go. So I don't even know that that's a big thing to pin on Shanahan at the end of the day, but I'm with you, Andy, that the moment I was concerned for the 49ers was the first two drives when CMC, who never fumbles, fumbled the ball. When Trent Williams, these are two of their best players. Trent Williams has back-to-back penalties that kill that second drive. Like, that's the thing with the Chiefs. and why I think that missed opportunities and like small moments make the difference, all the difference in the world in football, man, because that player on the other side, that team on the other side is the one guy you can't leave. You leave even a crack of the door open and he's going to come smashing through that thing like he's a damn Kool-Aid man. Okay. And that's exactly what happened.
Yeah. There's a lot there to react to. One of them, like, I also just want to say, like, Shanahan, there were some really good calls in that game. Like that fourth and going for it on fourth and three and coming out of that drive with a touchdown was pretty inspired. And like you mentioned the muff punt, which is as close to a, you know, it's a gaffe, but it's like, it's almost like a no fault situation, right? That's not somebody, you know, that's not some huge blunder by someone necessarily. Right. And they overcame it. Like, you know, Kansas City scores off that. And then you're like, oh man, here we go. And then the Niners came back and scored. Like the Jennings to CMC pass was inspired. Like I don't think it was that rough a game from the Niners coaching staff. I think it was just a classic game where like a couple of imperfect teams. The other thing that triggered something with me when you said it was like, I know people were raging that there weren't more rush attempts in the second half when you went in with a small lead. I get it. But they also very quickly got into like some bad down and distance situations like early in the second half too. Right. And some of those were related to penalties and some of those were related to like, I don't know, like if we're some of the friendliest scenarios for Brock Purdy to pass the ball are going to be first downs, right? Like, I don't know. Yeah. I don't hate that. I don't hate coming out in the second half and giving, you know, if your idea is we're going to present Brock Purdy with some very friendly situations in which to get some passes completed, I don't like that. That's probably first down. That's probably not third and long. So I didn't hate it in real time. And then you get to the end of the game and man, McCaffrey had 30 touches. Like, it's not like they went away from Christian McCaffrey. So I don't know. That's, I understand people's inclination. And I know like that this is just how we watch sports, as modern fans, I guess, is that we got to have somebody to blame at the end of the day. I feel like Shanny's taken a lot of that. And I just don't, you know, I don't feel like it's necessarily deserved. Like you know, you can't win the big one until you win the big one. And I feel like that is still somewhere out there in his future. I mean, shoot, they made it this far with like a 24-year-old quarterback who, you know, a little bit up and down in the game. But I thought Purdy in overtime was awesome. You know, I realize they don't punctuate that drive with a touchdown, but the completion to McCaffrey when Purdy was just getting engulfed was super impressive. The completion to Juszczyk when he just bought a lot of time and space, I thought that was great. Like some really nice moments to build on there.
You're right. It's just the way we consume this stuff as sports fans that, yeah, we got to have somebody to blame or whatever. But at the end of the day, you're not going to pitch it perfect in the Super Bowl. Andy Reid didn't pitch it perfect on the other side. And, you know, I mean, I guess if they had lost this game, we'd come out of it being like, I don't know. I don't even know what we'd say. Cause that's the thing with the Kyle Shanahan, you know, quote discourse or whatever is, all right, what are you going to do about it? Like, you're not going to fire Kyle Shanahan. So what are we doing here? Like, I don't know. Maybe the Niners bottom out someday and they do part ways. And then he goes and wins a Super Bowl with, I don't know, some other team, just like Andy Reid is doing now with Kansas City. I don't know. Again, he's 44 years old. We got a long way to go in the Shanahan story. I agree with you that there were inspired moments. I definitely think there are things you can second guess. I think there are things that he will second guess for his entire life, you know, from all of these Super Bowl losses. And he's certainly second guessing today. There's no question about it. But to me, yeah, I think like the Chiefs defense did a great job of taking away certain things in the pass game that you can do against San Francisco, because as much as this team on offense is the Avengers and the Death Star and an incredible unit and so talented, well, everybody has weaknesses. I mean, like they pressed the hell out of Debo on a lot of these routes, and like that's his issue. He's not a press man coverage beater. Okay. You and not to mention he got hurt. Oh, by the way, I haven't even said this yet, but like, talk about things that will just haunt you forever. That Dre Greenlaw injury has to be the most like WTF thing I've ever seen as like consuming football, because of the stage, because of the injury, because it's an Achilles injury, and because he was trotting trotting onto the field. I mean, crazy stuff there. That alone is painful enough.
That was horrible. And obviously, because of the timing of the injury, it probably cost him all of 2024, right? Like just a brutal break for an absolutely great player. The other thing that I was thinking of as you were speaking there is, man, you know who had just an absolute all-time near miss what might have been sort of game was your guy Brandon Ayuk.
Oh yeah, I know.
Just real painful. Was it end of the first quarter? There's a deep shot to him where Purdy actually had a little bit of time to make the throw, and maybe Purdy's just throwing to a spot and Ayuk doesn't quite get there. But man, that was, he had separation from the entire defense. He's open in the end zone, and it's just a misfire. He came open on a couple of plays that would have been almost impossible throws for Purdy to make. So whatever. But like, Ayuk was definitely getting himself open, clearly getting himself open all game. And it just didn't have a lot to show for it in the box score. But we talked about it earlier, but the play where McDuffie blitzed from the slot and San Francisco doesn't pick up the first down on the third and five late, like, man, Ayuk was open over the middle of the field. Yeah. At the line to gain, and whatever, it's a quick reaction play, and they go to Jennings instead of Ayuk. But man, Ayuk could have had like a 2-touchdown game with a ton of yards and could have been in the MVP discussion in an alternate universe.
Yeah, there were, again, it just comes back to, I think, missed opportunities. There was another throw that you can where Debo's streaking wide open that, Purdy misses on that one. And like, that doesn't mean that, oh, man, it's all Purdy's fault or anything like
Purdy
that.
Purdy got just drilled on that one. So, like, I hate to hang that on him.
Yeah. Yeah, that was a big, like, Chris Jones probably blew that one up. Because, again, this is what I keep coming back to here. Defense gets paid, too. And what I think just, again, makes all of this sting, and we could start to spin this forward here for the Niners, is that... Like you even got the performance that you wanted from the 49ers defensive line, because when we're talking like mismatches coming into this game, and again, Nate Tyson, I broke all that down. The one thing we probably didn't hit on enough is that if you get 100% out of the 49ers pass rushers, that was such a clear mismatch over the Chiefs offensive tackles, which have been, like I said, an up and down group all year. So you even got that on offense. You got Mahomes kind of, again, the fits and starts from the Chiefs offense, and you still couldn't get it done in this Super Bowl. And that's why you're sitting here pointing fingers at Shanahan or trying to cope with this, that, and the other, Andy, because again, spinning this forward, the reality here is I don't like the conversation we had with the Chiefs where, man, they could do this on offense. They could do this on offense. Like, I think for the most part, Andy, in 24, this whole group is probably back. Right, this whole group is probably back for another run, and when we're doing our fantasy projections, we're probably projecting them for about the same of what they did this year, because there's going to be a lot of teams probably calling the 49ers on Brandon Ayuk because he's on his fifth year option. He's woefully underpaid at $14 million on that option, but at the same time, a team in this much of a championship window, how much incentive do they have to trade him this year? Now, that being said, I think when we're looking at all of these guys, 24 might be the last time we're talking about all of them together, right? I don't know about you, but I think there is what I just said about Ayuk probably being on this roster next year. If he's on this roster in 25 and 26, like, there's a 0% chance that Kittle, Samuel, and Ayuk are all on this team, I think, beyond the 2024 season. The math is just not going to math there. By the way, then we start talking about Christian McCaffrey. Like, how long can they do what they did this year where they just center everything around McCaffrey in the run game? Like, because he's going to get to that age where we start to worry about running backs. Shoot, Trent Williams, guy's going to be 36 this summer, Andy. He's a legitimate weapon in the run game. I mean, even Kyle Juszczyk, like, how long is he going to be around? That's the thing I start to think about. And then the Purdy discussion hangs over all this, which is, he's, regardless of where you stand in the annoying Brock Purdy wars, it's inarguable that for what he gave them this year, he is one of the most the biggest values at the quarterback position because of how much he's getting paid. If they want to commit to him long term, he ain't getting paid to that. He ain't getting paid like that. Okay, not for much longer. So, and even, by the way, Andy, all the things I just said there in 2024, simple variance might say that like not everything is going to run as smoothly as it did this year, where you get like a perfect season out of Ayuk. You get a largely healthy season, for as much as any healthy season is going to go for Debo. You know, you get McCaffrey firing off at peak performance for the entire season. That's what makes these moments so painful. So I don't know, where do you kind of stand projecting this team in 24 and beyond?
Yeah, well, I think you're right that all the key pieces are back next season. Ayuk, I just thought, like, you know, I was pretty sold on Brandon Ayuk coming into this season, so I didn't need a lot of convincing. But just an almost flawless season from him, and a brilliant Super Bowl that didn't really show up in the box score necessarily. I thought he was great. This is maybe the second 400 touch season of Christian McCaffrey's career. And that's, you know, he's, you know, it gets, you get old in a hurry in the NFL, especially on workloads like that. And, you know, we talked about it with Pacheco. There's all these brand name veteran running backs out there. You wonder if, like, again, there's going to be such a crazy game of musical chairs at the running back spot. Maybe somebody tries to find their way to San Francisco as somebody who can fill the role that we thought might be destined for Elijah Mitchell this year, where it's just, you know, a little bit of a caddy to McCaffrey, somebody to take 8, 10, 12 touches a game off of his plate. So we're not that he appeared to be exhausted by the end of this season. He was awesome. He was plainly awesome in the Super Bowl. He's a great, you know, he's a transcendent player, as good as it gets at the position. But I mean, you can only endure so many seasons of 400 touches at that spot. But, you know, again, in the year ahead, which is probably all we should really focus on as NFL fans, because it's such a chaos league, they're probably all back. I thought, again, like, Purdy just turned 24. Right. So I feel like nobody should be making any, like, just declarative, this is what he is and he'll never be any better sort of statements on him. I do think, you know, they needed to try to, I don't know, if they had full belief in Brock Purdy, perhaps they give him more of an opportunity at the end of the first half. They didn't. That was a little bit disappointing, but man, I thought he showed a lot. I thought he showed a lot in the biggest moments. Didn't hit every throw, but again, overtime for him, I thought was really impressive. And he's so young. He's only 24 years old. He has old man vibes. So maybe we don't realize how young he is, but you know, that's still a developing player. So I don't know. Lot to be enthusiastic about, but of course I understand that they're feeling wrecked today and they're feeling as if, you know, Kyle Shanahan maybe isn't it, but I'm here to tell you, I feel like Kyle Shanahan is it. I feel like he wins Super Bowls down the road, and there's, I don't know, why on earth would they not be among the favorites next year? Certainly the favorite in the NFC.
Yeah, that's the thing, is I think they're probably the best team in the NFC still. Like, they have about $3 million over the salary cap, but again, I mean, there are ways they can wiggle around that. You know, we'll see, man. It's just, how long is this core going to stay together? I think we probably have like one more year in 2024, which, like you said, that's probably all we should care about, because like, how long is any of this going to last for anybody?
Yeah.
That's a fair question across the league, but I just think this is such a special and unique. This year was such a special and unique moment, because you got that leap from Ayuk, where, you know, a 1,300 yard receiver on 101 targets or whatever. You got George Kittle averaging the most yards per target of his career. Purdy is the most efficient quarterback in the NFL. Like I said, it's hard to just count on that rolling over alone next year. And that, like, I'm like for fantasy, I mean, I'm going to rank McCaffrey first overall. I think you're probably, but we all ranked Justin Jefferson first overall last year, and that didn't go well. We all ranked Jonathan Taylor first. I mean, that was a legit conversation, I think, between Taylor and McCaffrey. And I mean, a lot of the takes from that year did not age well for a lot of people that really wanted to tell you it had to be one or the other. Like, everybody ranked JT number one that year. Didn't go that well. And I mean, that doesn't mean that McCaffrey is cursed, but it just means that there's no certainty, right? I'd love to draft Ayuk and Samuel when annually there's going to be the annual sort of consternation from the fantasy community about how many targets can I project here and that whole thing. I want to be drafting those guys next year. It just is, the reality is, it's hard to roll over everything that went so right this year. And again, I think next year is probably the last time that these guys are all together.
Yeah, I think the thing with McCaffrey, and I've already seen people try to make the point, making the point online that, you know, we like there are not a lot of instances where the RB1 from one season runs it back the next year and is again the RB1, right? Like that's vintage LaDainian Tomlinson stuff, and Priest Holmes did it, and like maybe Gurley did it 1 year, but like we don't see that a lot. That's like an every 10 year thing. So maybe. Maybe the most likely scenario for McCaffrey is not that he, you know, produces stat for stat exactly what he just did. I just think he the ceiling for Christian McCaffrey is higher than anybody else because of the nature of the offense, because of his skills as a player, because he's a do-it-all guy. So his ceiling is higher. And I also think, like, he's going to be, you know, assuming nothing happens between now and July, he's going to be going into next season healthy again. And so like, he's not going to have an injury red flag, even if you still think of him as some kind of injury, not you, but people generally think of him as some sort of injury prone player. Yeah. He's not going to be hurt. He'll be coming off a tremendous season in a dynamic offense. And like, if he just gets to 14 games, say, there's no way he's not a top five fantasy back. I think he wins on ceiling and I think he wins on floor. And I think that probably puts him in a tier of his own at the position. I also don't know who the number two should be. Like, I could make a case for Breece Hall. I could make a case for Jonathan Taylor. Like, there's cases to be made for various other players. And there's all kinds of guys who, like, we don't know where Saquon's going to be. We don't know where Josh Jacobs is going to be. Like, there's, you know, I don't know who the number two is, but I sure didn't know who the number one is. It's Christian McCaffrey. So I still think he's at the top of draft boards.
All right. I think we've said it all about the Super Bowl. Andy, any other parting thoughts about this game in particular? Or, I mean, hey, the entire 2024 season, or geez, God almighty, the entire 2023 NFL season, because it's over. It's in the books.
Yeah, I'm bummed it's over, but like the combine is about to happen and the draft is about to happen, so it's not as if the NFL content machine ever stops. It's a weird year because I feel like we didn't have an all-time team, but then in the end, this season is gonna be a huge part of the Chiefs' like all-time team sort of resume. That was fun. I don't know. It's been a blast doing this, but whatever, we're going to continue the podcast, but the whole season has been a blast doing this show. And FFL was great this year. Like, this was it's good content year, man.
Yeah. I had a wonderful time this year. This year, it's funny. The NFL's so like the calendar is so weird. And I know I'm sure you feel this writing, and I'm sure even like listeners and consumers feel the same way. It's like, especially writing the Super Bowl recap piece this morning, it's like this year, but next year, but you know, the whole thing, because we are now in the meat of the 2024 calendar season. It's the middle of February, but we're kind of closing the chapter on the 2023 NFL season. And I will say that I agree with you. It was a wonderful season. I had a great time, as I always do, doing this show, FFL, everything. I'm very proud of the work that came out of this show, and that's a testament to you, Andy, every other host that joins me on the show, and of course what Colin puts in. And it's a shout out to you guys that listen to the show and support us. We appreciate it more than you know. There's no doubt about it. But like Andy said, I don't want to get all like, it's sentimental and the doors are closing and we're on to something that's ending, because it sure as hell doesn't feel like it, buddy.
No.
It sure as hell doesn't feel like it, because Andy, believe it or not, we are just 15 days away from the NFL scouting combine. We're 28 days away from free agency beginning, 73 days away from the NFL draft, 73 days from the draft feels alarmingly close. And that means we're just five-ish months away from fantasy draft season. So nothing is stopping. The content machine sure as hell is not stopping. The takes are not stopping. Football analysis is not stopping. I mean, we continue rolling. We continue pushing on. And on that note, for the offseason, pods are going to drop on this feed on Tuesday and Thursday. We are not going anywhere, whether it's coaching changes, free agency, the draft. We're going to be your, I hope, one of your many. I know that packed industry. You got a lot of content options. We're going to be one of your many guiding lights this offseason to provide you reaction, get you ready for the 2024 season, which I have a lot of high hopes for, man. I think this offense, I think this offseason is going to be great. I'm excited. I'm ready. So that's going to do it for today, Andy. Appreciate you joining me, buddy. A heartbroken Dalton Del Don, hopefully, is good. I hope he joins us on Thursday. That's the plan as of now. The plan is that on Thursday, he's going to join me as we dive into the 32 offseason fantasy questions for every single NFL team. We're going to preview the offseason, baby. We are officially there. I'm officially excited. And until then, we're out.